and welcome, everyone. I'm Morgan Klein, full-time mom, personal trainer, co-founder, and COO of Burn Bootcamp. I'm here to bring you a strong dose of hot topics such as nutrition, fitness, self-help, style, entrepreneurship, motherhood, and so much more. I strive to inspire you to live your life with greater balance, vitality, and empowerment. So grab a mug and join me for a cup of coffee and kettlebells. Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Coffee and Kettlebells. I'm very excited to have one of our guests back onto the podcast, Dr. Jolene Brighton. We are going to talk about when it's time to ditch the pill and what we can do when that time has come for us. So Dr. Brighton is back. She is a library of empowering information about women's health, hormones, periods, and more. Today, she's chatting with us a bit more about birth control, including how you should know when to stop birth control and other options for preventing pregnancy. As always, my goal is to present a variety of thoughts and opinions and common topics that relate to our lives as women. I want you to walk away from this having learned something, and then with all the information, you get to choose and apply that to your life. So welcome back to the podcast, Dr. Jolene.
Thanks so much for having me. I mean, looking forward to this discussion, especially after our last round of podcast.
Absolutely. Yeah. We've done three together, and you know, two specifically around birth control, about beyond the pill. So guys, make sure you go check it. It's episode 73 and 74, and we'll make sure to link that. By the way, Dr. Brighton, those were my two most downloaded podcasts. They continue to be my two most downloaded podcasts. So thank you so much for coming on and just being a wealth of knowledge for us.
Well, thank you so much for having me on and having this platform. I mean, I don't think people realize how much work goes into creating a podcast, and not to mention the work, but it's a huge financial investment. It's a lot to take on. And so the fact that you're doing this and helping women get access to this information really should be commended. And I had a feeling those were popular episodes because I heard from thousands of women. I remember when the first one came out, my customer service is like, what did you do recently? Because we're getting all these messages from women being like, oh my God, I needed this. Thank you. I'm so grateful for it. So I'm really excited to be back and support your audience and support you on your mission to bring people, you know, the buffet of information, right?
Yes.
And options so they can make the best decision for themselves.
Yes. And thank you for saying that, by the way. But that's exactly it. It's just about giving people that information to go back and make the decisions that are right from them. And we're not on here to tell you exactly what to do, right? Everybody's going to have their own path. But the best thing that, you know, can come out of this is that you have the decisions to make. And what's so important, I think women are really trying to take back hold of, is just feeling their best and not settling with the way that they're feeling and getting really down to the root of those issues. So I love the awareness that you bring just around kind of women's health and, you know, hormones and all the things that we deal with as we, you know, continue to go through these different stages of our life.
Yeah, well, the reality is that we all need this. I mean, when you look at the reports coming out and the research that's being done showing that, you know, within the United States, where you and I are sitting right now, only 17 states require sex education to be medically accurate. 17.
Wow.
17 states say, yeah, women actually deserve to have medically accurate information about their bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this was so, I mean, when I read that, I'm like, it felt validating in a way, because I remember being in my 20s and thinking that I was so dumb because I didn't understand how my menstrual cycle worked. And I was like, it's just too confusing. And when I was going to naturopathic medical school, I was like, I'm just going to focus in gut health because the gut is so much easier. And like, this menstrual cycle thing is so confusing. That's me as a woman living my body, menstruating, then not menstruating because I was on the pill and just doing withdrawal bleeds, but not understanding my own body. And I remember sitting and, mind you, for people listening, I didn't just get all my information from sex ed. I also, you know, have multiple science degrees. I took multiple physiology classes. It never really clicked. Spoiler, it was all men teaching me about the menstrual cycle. So I think that's maybe part of it.
Yeah.
But it was once I was in naturopathic medical school that it clicked. It's actually really simple. It's like, why was this so difficult for me? And yet I had this moment where I'm like, you shouldn't have to go to medical school to understand the body you live in. Like, why in the heck have I been menstruating for almost 2 decades now? And like, I didn't even understand how all of that worked. And because I was so confused about it. And I, you know, accepted the messaging that came to me saying, hormones make women crazy. Hormones are why you're the lesser. Having a menstrual cycle makes you weak. Like, being a woman's just inherently awful. And so I suppressed my cycle with the pill. And that is something that, if I could go back and teach my, you know, younger self, you know, when I look back at like, okay, look, I was like hugging a hot water bottle, vomiting, writhing in pain every single month because my periods were so heavy, so painful. I missed school. I ruined clothes. And yet when I look back at that, knowing what I know now, ironically, as we go into 2020, my 2020 vision, looking back, I'm like, wow, I really needed some, you know, I needed some dietary shifts. I really needed someone to help support me through what's normal, what's not normal, because my mom had these awful periods before having children. So I got the messaging that this was normal. And yet these things that we experience, they are common. They are not normal. Mm-hmm. And sometimes doctors tell us this is normal, but we forget that, you know, because, you know, presumably you're not a doctor listening to this, you're going to a doctor, but what do doctors see all day, every day? People with issues that need to be fixed. So right. Concerns, complaints. And so from the doctor's perspective, I mean, for me, I could definitely, you know, have a bias that like, every single woman in the world has estrogen dominance, going the other direction with that, estrogen dominance, because that's something so common that I see. And yet it is a common, not normal issue, but I could have that bias that like, oh yeah, that's just so normal. It's just so normal for women to have that because that's what I see mostly in my practice. So these hormone imbalances. That's just simply not the truth. Now, I know we're going to be talking more about birth control, and I'm not going to hijack this.
No.
Talking about, you know, because we have other, you know, there's going to be more to come, guys, on how to fix your period and what to do about these symptoms. Yes. But let's go into, you know, your question about, you know, coming off of birth control.
Yeah. And so, you know, I think I just want to validate your point because I learned so much on your podcast that we've previously had about, you know, my cycle in all of my 32 years, right? And it's like, it is sad that we're not being educated on how it works and why we're feeling the way we're feeling. And like you said, it's just kind of like we go to the doctor and birth control is most likely the number one thing that we're going to get prescribed. And I was no different than that. So I started birth control back in, when I was probably 17 or 18 because my periods were so heavy. I mean, to the point where the first day of my period, I couldn't even go to school because of the cramps and just the feel. You know, my mom would let me stay home because she understood. And I was on it probably for 10 years. And it's just, I realized, okay, I need to get off of this. And the way I felt when I got off of the pill was the biggest eye-opener for me. I was like, whoa, like, I feel so much better. My head is clear. Like, I feel like I can feel emotions, right? And then I had my baby, my first child, Cameron. And then, of course, you know, you go to your 6-week postpartum and they're like, okay, what birth control do you want to get on? And I remember I got on.
They're like, you're trying to heal and recover your body.
But of course,
I'm in with some hormonal disruption.
I'm breastfeeding, like all these things that are happening to my body. But of course, I get right back on it because I don't know. And I surely don't want to get pregnant again because they scare you to say, like, you're fertile right now and you need to be, you know, you need to be protected. And so got back on the pill, but immediately then saw those mood disorders again coming back and creeping in and just not feeling myself. So I got off of it and along comes baby number two. And so for me, this podcast is important because I want to make sure that we're empowering people to know what you can still do when you get off birth control to prevent pregnancy, if that's the decision that you're making, right? And just what are the right steps to go about getting off of it? And then I also want to talk a little bit about like the natural birth control that I'm seeing out there and like the copper IUDs, which I have a whole story about that, thinking it was this like non-hormonal issue and still had so many issues with it. So anyways, I'm rambling. Let's go ahead and jump right into... you know, if you're someone like me that's been on birth control for 5, 10 years, you know, where do we start to say, okay, it's time for me to get off this and let my body do what it needs to do naturally?
Yeah. And so I outline these. So for everybody listening, I outline these exact steps in Beyond the Pill. So I know sometimes people are like, I'm not an audio learner. So you like to read books, or you want a whole program and everything like done for you and outlined, it's there for you. So, you know, step number one is if you're going to come off of hormonal birth control for whatever reason, you're at your 10-year, you know, expiration date that you set for yourself, or you're having side effects and issues, or you're just wondering, who am I when I'm not on birth control, which is something you alluded to. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the biggest eye-opening things with my patients, and it's actually the Mirena IUD was the one that kind of, you know, kicked this all off for me in my career, that I just found it so odd that so many women would come into my practice saying, and a lot of times we'll see this postpartum as well. Postpartum is a really vulnerable time. I talk about this in my first book. There's a lot of changes happening. You're recovering your body. You're not sleeping. And in modern society, at least within the United States, we don't have the support systems that really we should be giving to the caretakers of the future of the human race. Mm-hmm. Like, no big deal, right? No big deal. So, you know, with that, whatever your reason is for coming off of birth control, step one is determine what your next form of birth control is going to be. And why that's important is because even if you do want to get pregnant, you really don't want to get pregnant at least within that 6-month window of being on birth control.
Okay.
So while in hormonal birth control, there's, you know, we are often reduced to only our reproductive system when the conversation around birth control comes up. And for some reason, very intelligent people called doctors forget the fact that there are receptors throughout our body for all of these hormones. And the synthetic ones that we've been on, they don't give us the benefits that our natural ones do. They're just not the same. They are synthetic forms of hormones that basically are keys into the lock. So they fit into the receptors, but they don't confer the same benefits. So for example, progesterone, often, and I'll hear this often where women will say, my progesterone's low, so my doctor's recommending an IUD or a birth control pill to bring my progesterone up. And I'm like, that's not how that works. Okay, listen, you have to ovulate to have progesterone. Progestin's not the same. And when you look at them, like one basic thing is progesterone helps the uterine lining, helps with implantation, helps you maintain a pregnancy. Progestin thins the uterine lining, prevents a pregnancy, and it can be used like with, you know, plan B to cease ovulation and to thin, and then just in case ovulation happens, we thin, you know, that drug thins the uterine lining so that implantation can't happen. So,
and that's what's in birth control, just to be clear.
That's what's in birth control, okay. Yes. So okay. I think just, you know, having that awareness, that level of awareness that like your doctor may have said, this is the same as what you make. I still see this. People write me all the time. Like my doctor said, I'm like, what? Mm-hmm. No, I think this is a bit because my first degree is in chemistry and I'm like, just look at the molecules. They're structurally different. They're not the same. You can't call something the same. So anyhow, let me go into what do we do first. So number one is backup method of birth control. Why don't we want to get pregnant within 6 months? Well, as I explained in Beyond the Pill, you know, it's not just about the hormone alterations. It's not just about like thyroid, cortisol, estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, you know, potentially being altered while on birth control. But it's also because there was a small study and we certainly need more research. But let me say this. This study came out. Please nobody freak out. Like we need to demand more research and more funding for research in women's medicine. The study came out showing that if you get pregnant within 6 months of discontinuing the pill specifically, your baby is at an increased risk of childhood cancers. Now, we need more research. That doesn't mean you're a bad person if you got pregnant within 6 months. You didn't know this. This isn't on you. This is on the researchers, the doctors, the FDA, and everybody, all the powers that be to actually get us this information. And it was astounding to me that I believe this study was 2018. 2018. Wow. Birth control has been popped, you know, by hundreds of millions of women around the world. In 2018, we decided to start asking this question. That is astounding to me.
Yes.
So we've got some work to do. Even if you've never used birth control, we want to get what I call pre-baby body ready. We want to have the best nutrient stores. We want to lower inflammation, fix our microbiome, like do this work. So then, you know, essentially what I say is that mama's both the seed and the soil. So it's, you know, with men, the focus is always like build the best sperm. And then that gets translated to women, just build the best egg. That's all that matters. Except that like, I'm a gardener. I can have heirloom tomato seeds and I can throw them on the ground and like anywhere, but they're not going to grow. They're not going to thrive. They're not going to produce the best fruit. And so we need to look at the female body as not just an egg, not just a vessel. I mean, you're going to go on to nourish this baby, as you know so well, and I'm sure other listeners do as well. But what if you don't want to get pregnant? Then you definitely want to have a backup method, because here's the other thing. It can take some women, if you had regular predictable cycles before starting birth control, it might take you 3 months to start ovulating naturally on your own and have your period return. What's classified as post-pill amenorrhea. That may look like 6 months if you've had PCOS. But for some women in the research, it can take a year to a year and a half to start ovulating regularly. This is really, really important because we don't have any studies right now that say birth control causes infertility at all. And so people often say, like, that's a total myth. And as it stands right now, yes, that is a myth. But I'm always curious of, like, okay, where do these stories come from? And part of this can be because we actually use birth control to delay pregnancy, right? And then we decide to get pregnant, maybe like 37, 38. And we come off and we are buying into that narrative that all doctors love to parrot, which is that, oh, birth control does nothing to your fertility. As soon as you come off, you can get pregnant the next month. Except that, like, not, it's not true for every woman. And so as we come off of it, it may take some time to reestablish ovulation. And if you're looking at, okay, you're 38, it takes you a year and a half. Now you're edging on 40. There's more variables going on than just birth control. So step one, backup birth control method. Step two is you really need to design a plan. So if you start birth control, or just pregnancy prevention, never had any period problems, acne, nothing else going on, then you're probably going to be fine to just end that pill pack, pull the NuvaRing, let that depo, clear your system, and then go into the 30-day protocol that I outline in the book. Mm-hmm. However, if you started birth control for symptom management, so let's say you have endometriosis, you may want to spend a good 3 to 6 months prepping your body and working with healthcare providers to ensure you have a safe transition in terms of not being debilitated with pain. Mm-hmm. You know, with something like acne, I think it's really important that women understand that, well, I think all women need to understand that hormonal birth control cannot and will not fix your hormones. It won't fix your periods. It won't fix your acne. It won't fix anything, but it will help with symptom management. And we just have to be honest about that. This is the informed consent, is not telling women, oh, here's this pill, it will fix everything, but being very, very clear of, like, we are using this medication for symptom management. We are going to suppress your symptoms. When you come off, they're going to come back. Mm-hmm. That's what happens. Mm-hmm. And often post-pill acne comes back with a vengeance. And in fact, when I came off of birth control and developed post-birth control syndrome, it was the first time in my life I had cystic acne. The first time. And that was horrific for me. And I have met with countless numbers of women, you know, in my practice, speaking internationally, who are like, same thing happened to me. Yet there's people out there that say, if you have acne after coming off of birth control, it's because you always had acne before. And you're just like misremembering. I'm pretty sure that's gaslighting. Pretty
yeah.
sure.
Yeah.
Like, so let's not do that to women. So I want, and I talk about this in the book, like, acne is going to, like, if you've had it before, it's going to come back. Mm-hmm. But if you can prep your body, and this is the thing I've seen universally, if women make dietary and lifestyle changes to start optimizing their hormones, even while they're on birth control, your ovaries are not going to spontaneously start ovulating while you're on birth control. At least they shouldn't, because then you would get pregnant, right? That's not how the drug's designed.
Right, right.
But in that, to make sure that, like, you are making those changes, the acne doesn't have to be that bad. And in fact, when you come off, how your acne starts to present, so I go through this in the book, how it starts to present, the other symptoms, you can take a quiz and really get dialed in, really can help you come to understand what is at the root of your acne or your other period problems, your other symptoms, and how to address that appropriately. So that's the other consideration. Now, I've alluded to making dietary changes, lifestyle changes, and, you know, that's gonna look like there's, you know, 5 steps really to the Brighten protocol. So one is the nutrients that we talked about. We have to replenish the nutrient stores. We have to reverse what I call the metabolic mayhem. Well, you're on hormonal birth control. It's inflammatory. It can lead to insulin dysregulation, it can lead to cortisol issues, but cholesterol issues. And so, you know, we have to look at, like, how do we support the metabolic aspect of our health? Because really, insulin and adrenals, they sit at the foundation of all of our hormones. So if you're having insulin issues, you're going to have other hormonal issues. While medicine likes to compartmentalize things and say, okay, well, insulin, you know, adrenal, thyroid, see the endocrinologist, and lady part produced hormones, go see the gynecologist, they really all interact with each other. So we have to be looking at that piece, which comes into, you know, a third part of the Brighton Protocol, which is to address your hormone imbalance. Not every woman is going to have the exact same hormone imbalance. So we have to figure out what that is and really address that. We also need to support detoxification pathways. So our liver and our detox pathways play a huge role in our hormonal health. So if we want to avoid symptoms of post-birth control syndrome, supporting detox pathways and restoring the health of the microbiome is so important. Our hormones are involved with our gut, and our gut influences our hormones as well. And so that's why that's such a critical piece of coming off of hormonal birth control. So is all that helpful?
Yeah, that's super helpful. And I just want to be clear too, because, like, let's say we were to make that decision that we wanted to get off, right? And if we were to go to our doctor and tell them that, what are they typically going to say to us? Would you say kind of what you're hearing from clients?
This is what really, like, it makes me feel like shame, I think is the word. I think it does make me feel like ashamed that colleagues will say to women, you're coming off of birth control. Okay, I'll see you back when you're pregnant. As if women are too stupid to navigate their own fertility, or or that it's too much work for their doctor to, like, engage in that conversation or make a referral to, like, a fertility awareness educator. You know, that's an old story that we're actually seeing starting to transition out. And I actually, I'm not a millennial. But millennials have this, I'm just giggling because this okay boomer thing just came across my radar. And I was like, I don't get what that's about because I'm old like that, but I'm not a boomer. So I'm like, I'm just straddling here. But something that was really interesting is I actually got a comment it was on Instagram. This woman sent me a DM and she's like, yeah, my doctor was like, no, birth control, like, you know, fixes your hormones. And if you're going to come off of it, like, you're just going to get pregnant. And, like, you know, birth control is women's rights and you should be proud to use it. And very much true for what this doctor lived through. And this woman's like, I just had a moment where I rolled and was like, okay, boomer. And it really hit me of like, oh, wow. Yeah. And this person went on and was like, I'm actually no longer going to see any providers that are 50 years or older. Like, and this young woman, she's in her young 20s. And I'm like, okay, listen, like, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, because, like, these docs have a lot of experience and a lot that they can lend us. Mm-hmm. But it's also like, oh, wow, there are these generational mindsets of, like, what was the adversity, the challenges women were up against for that generation? And then how are they taking their experience and basically pushing that agenda on the younger generation? And yet we're seeing millennials are rejecting hormonal birth control at the highest rate. And I have seen it's all like, I'm having a moment where I'm like really having to sit with all of this. And because this person said this to me, I was like, and by the way, guys, I'm not advocating to disrespect your doctor or ageism or anything like that. This is just something that, like, from my, where I sit, like, I'm not a millennial. I don't understand this whole okay boomer and, like, what's going on with that. And so trying to understand that, because I don't want to be that 50 something.
Yeah.
You say that too. Like, what is it going to be like? Okay, Gen X. So with that though, just to, you know, recognize that, yeah, when I've seen doctors on social media being condescending, outright dismissive of women's stories. When I have patients come to me and they ask their doctor to remove their IUD because they're like, you placed it and now I'm feeling crazy, or I want this implant out of my arm. And the doctor's like, no, you are crazy. It's in your head. Wait, that's her body. Mm-hmm. And when I look back through these things, I'm like, wow, these are definitely older generations of doctors. And I don't know, I don't want to say that like, oh, because they're bad, but I think it is something that like, we really have to turn up the lights on this in medicine, this inherent medical gender bias, and this idea of your doctor thinking they have the final say on your body. Mm-hmm. Now, listen, I get like in a car accident, I'm in the hospital, and I'm unconscious, and I'm bleeding out. Please have a final say on like my body and making sure I live, and like love that to be present. But when it comes to birth control, there's not really life-threatening conditions that we're using this for. And in fact, going on birth control for some women, you know, we see there's a correlation with increased suicide risk. Mm-hmm. So in some women, it can very well be life-threatening in that right. way. And I've right. certainly had patients who have started birth control and they're like, I'm having the darkest thoughts I've ever had. Like, I actually want to hurt myself. And mm-hmm. the very first thing is, we need a mental health provider to be on this team. And like, I mean, you know, making sure that she's safe and stable, but we really have to examine, why is it that some women go through this when they start hormonal birth control?
Yeah. Well, I can attest to that after having my first child, you know, was getting right back on that birth control. I didn't have suicidal thoughts, but I certainly just was like, I had no happy times. Like, I was just like, even keel the whole time, no mood, like no reaction or emotion or anything, you know? And I just felt like, wow, this is really controlling my mood. So I think that's a very scary thing.
Yeah. But what does society say to that too?
Yeah.
Oh, you're a mom.
Yeah.
This is what it's like to be a mom.
Yeah.
Moms get depressed. Moms mm-hmm. get anxious. Moms mm-hmm. are tired. But no, like that is just because it's happening a lot doesn't mean that it's normal. And so this is a lot of, you know, the bias that we see in women's medicine.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I talk about this for everybody who's listening, you can do a Google search and see, well, don't actually search on Google. You can't find anything good on these days. It seems like DuckDuckGo search, because that's where you'll actually get the studies coming up and the information showing that, you know, major medical institutions are changing the way they're changing their curriculum because it is so well recognized that there's a bias in medicine against women, like that whole lingering hysteria, it's still bleeding through. And that's mm-hmm. like, that's part of this of why I think this woman who wrote to me was like, I'm not going to see a provider who's 50 or older. And I think it's because that it's still like that bias was still there in their education stronger than maybe it is now. And so we're at a very interesting time because I'm like, I have mentors who are well past their 50s, who I look up for, up to and, you know, contact because they are such a wealth of wisdom. But like, to me, receiving that message was an opportunity, an invitation to check my own bias. And perhaps what are the messages that I have knowingly internalized and that I am now pushing, you know, potentially pushing on other women. And, you know, if you follow me on Instagram, my husband actually says I'm like super frustrating because he's like, you are like, you will argue, like you will argue one side, then the other side in the middle. And then sometimes you come to the conclusion that actually we're all wrong. And like, we need to go a different way. And,
hey, at least you're open-minded.
You know, I try to be open-minded. I grew up in a really dogmatic, oppressive household, being told that being a woman did make you the lesser, women were to submit to men. And listen, if that's your belief and that's your jam, I don't judge you for that. That never resonated with me. Mm-hmm. And so it's things like that, you know, that have happened in my lifetime that leave me, you know, holding a bigger container to say that these conversations are welcome. And, you know, very much on my social media and in the work that I do, I really try to hold boundaries and space for there to be safe conversations and for us to all recognize that we can only live our best life. We can't live somebody else's life best for them. And so yeah. when you come from your place of knowing, being, your biases, your experiences, and tell another woman, no, this is right for you, this is what you should do, like, that's very disempowering to her, but mm-hmm. you also just crossed a line. Mm-hmm. Like, and I don't think, you know, as we've seen these conversations around birth control and women's health, like everybody has an opinion on women's bodies. I mean, especially when you're pregnant, right?
Like, yeah.
yep. When you're pregnant, when you're getting married, you know, everybody's got these like opinions. And, mm-hmm. you know, in all of that, there are people who are very much building platforms or camps, so to speak, based on hate and division. And to me, that is not how we're going to move forward. That is so old story. I'm like, well, yeah, let's kick it back to like the 1950s, because like that is very old story to think that, oh, we're the only ones that are right. And anyone who questions us, like shut them down and bully them. And it's, or, oh, we're perceiving what they're doing to be something awful and predatory because that's something that we would do. And so like, oh, let's do that. And it's like, okay, hang on. Maybe we can assume the best in people mm-hmm. and have better outcomes. Yeah. Because I don't think that, and this is my belief, I don't think that even when you have a doctor who's like, birth control is your best option, and if you're having side effects and symptoms, like, that's not something that is true. And, you know, these things that are really hurtful and really painful, especially when you're that woman sitting there seeking help, I don't think that's coming from a place where they are choosing to cause harm or choosing to really put you down. I think they very much are coming with their information that they do feel can serve best.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about natural birth control. So you talked about having that backup method, right? And so mm-hmm. obviously you have condoms out there. You have apps that you can track.
Everybody loves those.
I see like different devices now that you can kind of either wear or track your ovulation, track your periods. So talk to us a little bit about those natural birth control or family planning options if you are ready to stop taking hormonal birth control.
Yeah, well, you know, condoms, is as much as I joke, like nobody really likes those, because I hear that so often when they're like, ew, I don't want to use condoms. And I'm like, okay, look. If you are not in a monogamous relationship, like this is a big fail in medicine where a gal, like, you know, she's 18 and she just got into college. Doctor's like, here's a prescription for the pills, study hard, don't get pregnant. But wait a minute. We need to use barrier methods because those protect against sexually transmitted infections, mm-hmm. HPV, HIV, mm-hmm. gonorrhea, chlamydia, trichomonas. Like, this is really, really important. And I really advocate that every woman learn how to appropriately place a condom herself. And why that is because when they're used correctly, only 2 out of 100 women become pregnant. But that number jumps to 18 per year with imperfect use. Hmm. And I actually just saw, I follow this sex educator, Shan Boodram, on YouTube. And I actually just saw this video, everyone should check it out, of her and her husband competing of who could put on
the condoms
on
better.
On a banana faster.
Oh my goodness.
And like he was quick on the draw, which is, you know, what you would expect. However, I had this thought as I was watching it of like, yeah, you know, though, like we should also evaluate who placed it correctly.
Yeah.
So this is a really, it's important skill for sexually active females to have. Because even if you are in a monogamous relationship, if you choose to use fertility awareness method, you may very well want to leverage a condom during your fertile window. Mm-hmm. So fertility awareness method, the idea with that, and I'm going to go a little deeper, but I first want to say with the condom piece is that you can only really get pregnant about 6 days out of the month. So you as a woman only ovulate 1 day out of the month. You are only fertile 1 day out of the month. But it's the sperm that are tricky and they mm-hmm. can hang around for 5 days or so. And so that's why, you know, if you're using fertility awareness method, being familiar with condoms, the pull out method, withdrawal method, they used to call it coitus interruptus. That's something that some couples rely on during that fertile window. You know, with perfect use, it's about 4% failure rate. Like it's pretty good, in terms of like what I was taught in school. But here's the thing, because, and I know this is always like such a big question. So, you know, women will say like, oh, so I could just use that, right? Or they'll say like, I'm using that. Is that bad? When it comes to hormonal birth control, you have to evaluate what risks you're okay with. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to non-hormonal birth control, you have to evaluate what risks you're okay with. And if you're okay with the risk of getting pregnant, then sure, withdrawal method might be something you use during that fertile window. But for me personally, and as I talk as a doctor to my patients, I'm not comfortable with birth control methods when women aren't in charge, And with men, you know, their hormones. So there's this funny thing where people are always like, oh, women's hormones control their moods and like, and how their brain functions. And the old story and what older generations say is like, don't tell anyone how our hormones influence our brain because they'll use it against us. And yet, which was true, now, you know, what I very much advocate for is that, yes, your hormones make you like function in different ways and actually complement men's brains. But, you know, with men, their hormones very much influence their behavior and their mood just as well. They just don't cycle over a month. They cycle over a 24-hour period. And so know that, like, if you're having sex, his hormones might override his judgment and that withdrawal method might
Or, you know what, like, let's be honest, like, alcohol can change that, right? If you guys have been enjoying a night out, or there's other factors there, like you said, that we don't have that control over.
Yeah, no, that's a perfect point. So alcohol actually affects frontal lobe inhibition, which is like pump the brakes on your actions. And so, yeah, I mean, if alcohol's in the mix, these days, cannabis is legal in a lot of places. So if there are other factors in the mix, like, yeah, these are things to consider.
Yeah.
Now, you know, to the point of fertility awareness method, we've actually seen that the FDA caught up with other parts of the world and approved the first femtech device called Natural Cycles as a contraceptive device, which is amazing. Now, we also have DAISY in the United States. There's also AVA. There's other fertility awareness apps out there as well, where you can just take your basal body temperature. So first thing in the morning, eyes pop open, don't get up, don't pee, don't do anything else. Just put that thermometer under your tongue and take your temperature. And what that does is that it helps you predict when your fertile window is going to be. Now, if you are, and there's also Taking Charge of Your Fertility. That's like a very, very important book, I think, for every woman to read. I read it. I'm very forthcoming and honest about this. Paper charting is not for me. I don't know. I can't get it together.
Yeah.
So, but there are women out there who teach paper charting, who do this. If that's your jam, totally awesome. Go that route. I'm more of like, let me leverage some technology here.
Mm-hmm. So same
with fertility awareness method. There's some basics that you need to know. This is not the rhythm method. So I want to be really clear. A lot of doctors are taught that those are synonymous, and you'll even see, even in ACOG a few years ago, they had something where they were talking about fertility awareness method, but it was really rhythm method they were talking about, where rhythm method is assuming this, that all women are going to ovulate like day 14. Believe it or not, there's doctors who still believe this. We all don't ovulate on day 14. Ovulation is not always clockwork predictable, and that's normal. So to understand fertility awareness method, first thing is day one is the first day that you have your period. Ovulation typically occurs, you know, we say day 12 to 14, but it really could be day 10. It could be day 18, like we see with polycystic ovarian syndrome. But what we're looking for in all of this is an LH surge. So this is something that, you know, for women who are wanting to get their hormones tested or wanting to get pregnant, they can get an ovulation prediction kit and see when that LH surge happens. But with that, you're going to be tracking your temperature and your symptoms, most notably your cervical mucus. What's interesting is that when it comes to like how contraceptives were developed, they were developed with the understanding that that fertile cervical mucus is actually a superhighway for sperm and really nourishing. Whereas progestin, I've actually seen some experts say progestin is like straight up toxic to sperm in terms of how it changes the cervical mucus. Not that progestin specifically affects the sperm, but how it makes a hostile environment for sperm. So you track your temperature, you'll see, and if you're using an app, the nice thing is, so like I've used the DAISY for me because I'm wanting to avoid pregnancy. When that green light goes, it means go. Green light, go. Red light, no. Red light is my, like, that's when I'm fertile. Mm-hmm. So that's where you're going to abstain from sexual intercourse. So if you are, you know, wanting to engage in some kind of sexual activity, maybe it's something else. I've seen doctors say, like, oh, the problem with fertility awareness method is that you, like, it forces abstinence on you once a month. And I'm like, I don't know about you, but there's a lot more that you can do in a bedroom than just have vaginal intercourse. And at the same time, you can use condoms, you can use a diaphragm. Well, those are harder to come by, so maybe a cervical cap. I'm not as big of a fan of cervical caps just because, you know, it can be anywhere from like 16 to 32% of women becoming pregnant in the first year when that's their number one method. So again, if that's, if pregnancy prevention is the name of the game, maybe not your best bet. And, you know, using spermicide, some women have real issues with that. In that it can alter the vaginal ecology. So like the microbiome in your gut, you got one in your vagina as well, on your skin, on your scalp, like in your hair follicles. I mean, we've got these little microbiomes everywhere. So, you know, in that, you're going to avoid having unprotected sex in that section, in that fertile
And it's typically
window.
Around 6 days, you said, right?
That's what it's classified as. And that's because of how long sperm lives. Yeah. And so when you're doing this correctly, using the symptothermal method, that's what I'm describing. And how do you know to do this correctly? Well, in Beyond on the Pill, I actually recommend working with a fertility awareness educator, because I think that can be so tremendously helpful. And even if you don't want to use fertility awareness method as your number one pregnancy prevention method, it's a great way to get to know your body and really get in tune with your natural cycle and learn what your normal is. Now, when women are using FAM correctly, you know, the pregnancy rate is about 1.8 per 100 women. And, you know, there's, you know, also studies that have shown that like after 13 cycles, only 0.6, so that's about a 94% efficacy rate, got pregnant. And then what's the difference here? The women who have no unprotected sex in their fertile window, so they're using condoms, they're using, you know, other methods, doing other things, they have lower pregnancy rates. Whereas, you know, when women are not as diligent, we can see about 13 to 20 per 100 women will get pregnant. Now, what's important is to juxtapose this with the pill, which with typical use is about 91% effective. We're all told it's 99% effective. You want something that is 99% effective, go with an IUD. Those, you know, IUDs, and you might be listening to this being like, but I don't want a hormonal IUD. A copper IUD is hands down the number one method that when it works for a woman, she sings the praise about it. Mm-hmm. And so it has the greatest user satisfaction. And in addition to that, it has one of the highest efficacy rates. But keep in mind that just because all of that science is true, it might not be true for you. So I have had patients who've gotten pregnant. I've had friends who've gotten pregnant with a copper IUD. So sometimes nature finds a way. The only thing that's 100% effective in not like getting pregnant is not to have sex with a male that has a penis. Yes. That is the only 100% effective means. So with the copper IUD though, It tends to have a high efficacy rate. And, you know, there used to be a lot of fear about, you know, pelvic inflammatory disease. We don't really see that it's certainly something if you have an infection, we see your doctor immediately, but the risk isn't as high as, you know, some people have reported in the past. But when the copper IUD doesn't work, well, let me just say this actually, who does it not work for? If you have a history of heavy periods, painful periods, you have endometriosis, you have fibroids, you have adenomyosis, this is probably not going to work for you. And that's because a copper IUD can increase your period flow and cramping. And, you know, my little stubborn self did a copper IUD despite having a history of heavy, painful periods. And my goodness, it was bad. And I actually became anemic. In part, let's be fair, I was a vegetarian. So in being a vegetarian, you don't consume the most bioavailable forms of iron. Mm-hmm. So my diet really couldn't keep up with the flow of blood. And so I became anemic. It's actually when I transitioned out of being a vegetarian. And then I was like, I gotta get this IUD out.
Yeah.
But you know, if it does work, it can work beautifully. But I want to just say, and I know you have a question for me, whatever method, anytime you're going to go with a medical intervention, and pharmaceuticals, these are drugs, okay? Hormonal birth control are drugs, or a copper IUD, that's a medical device. Anytime you're going to have a medical intervention like that, track your symptoms, get baseline lab work, and continue to track your symptoms. And then depending on, you know, so for my patients who want to go on the pill, you know, we're going to retest labs in 6 months to 12 months of them starting it. So we can really evaluate is this the best intervention for you? Mm-hmm. I don't really care what all the research says. If you are telling me this doesn't work for you, I need to listen to that first and foremost and figure out why.
That makes complete sense. And that's not something that your typical OBGYN is going to do, like the blood work, right? And so I just want to share a little bit as you talk about copper IUDs, because after I had my son, my second child, I was like, okay, I have got to get on birth control again, because what I tried to do was track my fertility, but I did not use a thermometer. I just used like an app, okay? And so I'm going to be honest out here. I want you guys to know that was not accurate for me, because I think I ovulate later than the app is telling me that I'm ovulating. And if you want to share any thoughts on that, you're more than welcome to. I'm going to put it all out here right now. So I knew after my second child, I had to do something different, right? But I tried the copper IUD and I got horrible yeast infections. I had never had yeast infections in my entire life. And sure enough, as soon as I got on that, every month I would get one. And I know that's TMI, but I want to just like be honest, because it isn't for everybody.
Okay. Anybody listening right now? Okay. First thing I'm going to say is, one, we shouldn't have TMI as women. We should be able to talk about whatever we want. But two is, if you do feel like that's TMI, you might want to skip the first part of my book where I talk about my yeast infections, my sex problems, and my vagina.
Well, it's not TMI for me, but I don't know. Maybe that makes others uncomfortable. But, you know, I'm going
to
be honest, because
sit with them.
Yeah.
Like, really? Like, if it makes you uncomfortable to hear that another woman had an infection, like, that's like, why? Where is that coming from? And that's not, it's not coming from you're a bad person. It's usually coming from the fact that we've been told, even subtly, hi, Blue Windex on a MaxiPad commercial on TV, that we should be ashamed of what our bodies do. Mm-hmm. And it's something that I, you know, I was laughing and telling a friend the other day that I'm like, nobody shames the dog for taking a poop. But I mean, we talk about how we do that every day and like, oh, we should feel bad and embarrassed about it.
Right.
Like, that's just silly. Like we have enough to do in this lifetime that we cannot get distracted and bogged down with all of that.
True. Very true. So it wasn't for me, right? My body was telling me that. So I got off the copper IUD, which I'm glad that that is a good option for some people, because that was going to be one of my questions is like, obviously it does say that it's non-hormonal, but for some reason that copper just didn't agree with my body. And then I tried to get on the NuvaRing because my doctor informed me that since it's in your vagina or like it sits, you know, in your uterus or whatever, the hormones don't go through your bloodstream to make you feel the crazy depressing thoughts that I was feeling on the birth control. Tried that for a month or two and I said no. It's like my body was not meant to be on any birth control at this point in my life. So my question really is, after I'm sharing all of that, is you know, we should be looking for these signs, right? Like we should be looking for these signs and these symptoms. And When do we know when to look for another option? Like outside of the blood work, what are some things that can say red flags? For me, it was a yeast infection and just not mm-hmm. feeling my best. But some people may ignore some of these things and just think they're normal. But what should we really be looking for to say, hey, this isn't the right option for me?
Mm-hmm. I want to clear that up. The uterus is not a vacuum container. It's not Las Vegas. What happens in there doesn't always stay in there. I was certainly told that, you know, and that I think is like a throwback to like the early 2000s. When IUDs were new, that's what they were saying. I mean, that's the marketing. Please, everybody understand that within the United States, like we're one of two countries in the world that allows direct to consumer marketing when it comes to pharmaceuticals. And so just as much as they can market to you to buy, you know, some products, you know, I'm like pantyhose or soda or whatever it is, mm-hmm. they can do the same level of marketing. And so that was some marketing and that was some misinformation spread to doctors. Because we do know that women with the NuvaRing IUDs, they can stop ovulating. Well, what's stopping you from ovulating? Birth control, hormonal birth control elicits an effect on your brain. So telling women that, oh, using the NuvaRing, it's just going to stay there. It's not going to go. That's misinformation. That's incorrect. If you stop ovulation, you're doing that by changing brain function. Like, please let everyone just let that set in.
Yep.
When they're telling us like, oh, you're having these mood symptoms, there's no studies to like prove that what you're saying is true. Well, You know, maybe the study hasn't been done in the way that could actually show causation, but there are so many women who have reported this. So mood is one of the first things that, you know, comes up. It's one of the number one reasons women leave birth control trials where they're like, I can't even handle it. I'm out. And yet doctors still line up to say, nope, what you're experiencing isn't real when it happens in the general population. Yet it exists in the package insert. And this is what like sometimes drives me a little bit nutty is that I will get people who write and they're like, where are you getting this information? And like, this, you know, this is scaring women. And, you know, this isn't even true information. I'm like, I'm getting it from the package insert that the drug manufacturer is disclosing. It's in the package insert. And they're like, oh yeah, I guess I've never read that. Yeah. Like you got to read that. So, for everyone listening, mood is one of the things that we want to look for. If we have anxiety, if we start having like racing thoughts or just disturbing thoughts of any kind, you're having depression, you know, mood swings, you're incredibly irritable, that's a sign that it's not working for you. If you're experiencing digestive issues, so like I said, there are receptors all over your body for these hormones. So if you're experiencing digestive issues, so now you have gas, bloating, constipation, diarrhea. You know, we know that the pill specifically is correlated with an increased risk of Crohn's disease and other autoimmune conditions. So if you start having joint pain, weird rashes, new onset of headaches, if you have a new onset headache, migraine with aura, you see flashing lights, that is a hard no on oral contraceptives because we know there's a correlation with that and increase of cardiovascular events, specifically stroke risk. So looking at those pieces. So just going through each system of your body and noting, how do I feel? The other thing is that, you know, my patients, when they come in to see me, I hand them a journal. I need them tracking their data. Labs are one snapshot in time. They can't give us all the information because, again, you're a cyclical creature who is cycling over a month period of time. And I can't, what am I going to do? Send you to the lab every single day and get your blood drawn? No, you would hate me. I would hate me. I wouldn't like that. So, you know, tracking your symptoms is super, super valuable. This is your personalized data. This is the data that no lab can access. So it has tremendous value. And going through and just journaling, like, how are you feeling? And when you write these things down, this is what's so important. Gaslighting is very much a phenomenon that happens in women's medicine. It happens to women all the time, but certainly being well documented in women's medicine. It is very, very hard to tell you that you don't know your body or you're misremembering when you have it written down in front of you. And that's something that I tell women all the time. Write it down, quantify it. Your periods are heavy. What does that mean? Oh, well, I used to use a tampon like 4 times a day. I had to change it, but now it's like every single hour. Okay, that's different than just saying, oh, I have a heavy period. Like those kinds of quantifiable data, that's something that really triggers your doctor to listen in. So,
yeah.
And why I say that is because it's this really sad thing that I keep seeing, you know, people saying like, we need to teach more women how to have, you know, educated discussion with their doctor so that they can get the help they need and basically, and get their doctor to listen. And I'm 100% behind that. Like, that's what I do. I want to help every woman have more educated discussions with their doctor. But I'm like, man, that is just one more thing on the patient's shoulders. And when you don't feel well, and now you got to be like, okay, and I have to talk to my doctor in this really specific way to get them to listen. Like, we got a long way to go in medicine.
Exactly.
But really, I mean, all this change is going to start with women. I mean, women are going to change medicine. Like patients are going to change medicine, not doctors.
Yeah.
That's, you know, really the way forward is listening to women, believing their stories, staying humble and curious as they tell them, and not acting like we know it all or we have every answer. Like doctors don't know everything, and we're not always going to have the answer because we have limitations in our understanding of the natural world when it comes to science. Mm-hmm. So tracking your symptoms, if things come up and it's not okay for you, then it's not working for you.
Yep.
And to advocate for yourself sooner than later, because like, let's just take mood symptoms as an example. If you start out having, you have lack of motivation, loss of joy in your life, you're starting to cry more, that's a good time to go see your doctor. Because 6 months from now, you can't even remember what normal looked like for you. And you might start thinking that is your normal and this is who you've always been. And we can kind of get lost in all of this and lose ourselves in all of this. So the sooner you can advocate, the better. And if your doctor dismisses you, they're not a bad person. They're just not the right doctor for you.
Yep. No, I love that message. I think just, again, listening to your body and not saying, oh, this is normal or these are just the symptoms. You know, I think it's just really about taking charge of your health and the way that you want to feel. So I love all those tips. Thank you for sharing that. Okay, last question. And I think this is probably one that I'm going to say we could probably talk about for a while. But let me get your thoughts on other things that are disrupting our hormones, right? So I know there's this big topic of birth control affecting our hormones and fertility, but what about some of the products that we're using in our everyday life or just the things that we're surrounding ourselves with, our environments? Like, how is that playing a role in our hormones? And what should we be looking out for better products to support those hormones if we are wanting to have a baby?
Yeah. So this is a very interesting time in the world. I mean, we are just the most toxic time on the planet. And there is so much outside of our control. So much. I mean, you can't control that you're sitting in traffic and you're breathing in environmental toxins because of exhaust. You can't control so many of these things. So I want to say that first because it can feel really overwhelming and really scary. And I have definitely had my times of crying in bed at night, just being like, because I'm a mom and I'm like, oh my God, what did I bring my kid into? So first things first, we have to focus on what we can control. My dear friend, Laura Adler, everybody go look her up. She's environmental toxins nerd on Instagram. She is my go-to resource because she has dedicated her life to studying environmental toxins. And this is really important for women to understand is that your doctor and healthcare providers can be experts in their arena. But if they have not done the work to be an expert in environmental toxins or let's say nutrition, there's lots of doctors who have never even taken a nutrition course who are giving their quote expert opinions. Those are not expert opinions. Mm-hmm. Those are just opinions. And what medicine and science, well, mostly medicine, what always happens first is the first thing is dismissing, saying, oh, well, there's no research. Well, absence of evidence doesn't mean that we're not going to find out in a decade or so that it wasn't causing harm. So this is very important as we talk about tampons, maxi pads, these kinds of personal care products. So this is really important to understand that currently we are at this fork in the road where there are doctors saying there's no evidence that these that organic tampons are better or that the chemicals in tampons cause harm. Therefore, just use them. You can be on the wrong side of history saying that how do I come from a place saying that? Because I have watched what has happened time and again when we talk about these toxins. And, you know, at the same time, there's people that are in that camp who are like, oh, you know, organic tampons are elitist and, you know, that they shame women who can't afford them. And I'm like, no, no, no. You slow your roll right there. Those chemicals never had any business being in our personal care products or our tampons to begin with. And it shouldn't be a question of class or socioeconomic status as to whether or not you can have these, quote, clean products. Such a silly thing. They like to be like, oh, they're clean. Well, what the heck are the other ones? Like, it really, you know.
That's what we should be challenging is those companies that are creating the toxic products for us.
Well, yeah. And get this, because they're like tampons are considered medical devices, they haven't had to disclose what's in them. So, and then we see the other side of the camp that's like, oh, our tampons, you know, might kill us and they're doing all this harm. And I'm like, well, I don't know if it's that bad. Okay. But it is a mucous membrane. And vaginas are highly absorbent tissue. So same with like your oral mucosa in your nose, right? And mom's like always like, don't touch your eyes, nose, and mouth when you're on a plane. Yeah, because things get in.
Yeah.
So with that though, we have to stand back and say, is there more to this? See, I think when I see experts who are shutting down this conversation and they might be a doctor, but they've never studied environmental toxins, I'm like, what are you doing? You are out of your lane. You're outside your scope of this. And in addition to that, you know, when I see people saying, well, you know, that's shaming women who don't have access, I'm like, can you please redirect your energy to say, it should have never mattered how much money you have. It shouldn't be based on your socioeconomic status, whether or not you get exposed to these chemicals. And furthermore, just because you may be in this position, seeing some other woman and being like, well, she's in poverty, so we're not even going to talk to her about it. How dare you? Mm-hmm. How dare you decide what information she can and cannot receive? And I say that as a woman who grew up in poverty, of like, I just find that incredibly condescending. Mm-hmm. So why I bring this all out is because, you know, the Environmental Working Group has been putting out information about what is being found in our tampons and our maxi pads or just pads, these products that we use, and very delicate, highly absorbent tissues. And what they're finding, you know, is that so some of these feminine care products can increase your exposure to phthalates, endocrine disruptors. But in addition to that, you know, well, there has been some preliminary evidence saying that it might play a role in fertility. So that's again about our hormones. So does this mean that like we should just stick our head in the sand and be like, oh, I don't want to listen to this? No, we should be asking for more information, more disclosure, rather than being like, oh, this is just like made up stuff and nobody like worry about it because there's no research. Ask for the research, demand for the research. And, you know, support. So someone, Jennifer Wise Wolf comes to mind. She is really leading the charge to end the taxes on these tampons, on our personal care products altogether. It's ridiculous. We get taxed for this. Mm-hmm. It's called the pink tax. And, you know, there are organizations like Bloody Period and period.org. They're trying to end menstrual poverty and inequality that happens just to menstruators globally. This is really, rather than, you know, standing the ground to be like, no, there's no harm, or I don't want to know about it, let's go support people who are trying to raise this awareness and trying to create this change. Now, as I talk about Beyond the Pill, you know, women are disproportionately affected by endocrine disruptors. So if people don't know what these are, endocrine disruptors are a group of chemicals that can actually, just like synthetic hormonal birth control, can dock onto our receptors and elicit change in the body. Yeah. And so, you know, some of these like xenoestrogens, some of us are familiar that we don't want to microwave our food in plastic. I'm like, oh God, I definitely did that in the 80s. now I haven't even owned a microwave in like 12 years. And so, you know, that not drinking out of plastic water bottles, like, and you know, these and choosing organic. And these things are not just important for your health. I think this is really important to understand because it's really, it really just breaks my heart when I see doctors out there saying like, you know, don't eat organic. It's not any better for your health. And I think about okay, so I grew up in California. I come from a large Hispanic family. And I think about how many of the farm workers are in the strawberry fields being sprayed with these chemicals. Like when you're dollar voting organic, you're dollar voting for the planet. Mm-hmm. Like that, oh, it's no better than your health based on one study is a super myopic view and super selfish. Like look at the planet as a whole. Look at what is happening to, we're losing birds every day, species mm-hmm. dying. Like when we start to look at this, like, let me say this, like, this isn't to scare you or freak you out. Although I'm a little sweaty right now, I will say that. It is to say that when we make these choices, it is not a vote just for our health to be better, but it is a vote for others,
yeah,
for the planet.
And for the next generation too, you know, like creating that demand so people will continue to, you know, give us organic crops, right?
Yeah. And, you know, what about the fact that like so if you're in the EU, there are American companies who produce skincare products that are specific to the EU and that are different formulations mm-hmm. than the United States, because in the United States, and this always cracks me up when mm-hmm. I had this doctor that he's based in London and he was like, oh, this personal care product thing is not that big of an issue. And I'm like, yeah, but I was sitting in London, but I'm not. I'm saying in the United States, yep. where we have less regulations, where, you know, manufacturers of baby specific formulations have knowingly put carcinogens in there and not disclosed it mm-hmm. to consumers. That's just unethical and wrong. And so this is like, we need to take it one step at a time. What I recommend to women is look at what you put on your skin every day and what you're cleaning your house with. And over time, and there's articles on this at drbrayton.com, begin to phase out the things that have the worst ratings on Environmental Working Group and bring in other things. Like, makeup is expensive. And there's some people who are like, just go without makeup. And I'm like, nah, you know, you told my 25-something self, I'd be like, yeah, but I passed 35. And I'm like, no, I like me some makeup.
Yeah.
I do like my makeup. So, you know, in that, we can phase these things out. We can start to educate ourselves to do better and to make these transitions. And, you know, it can have tremendous impacts on your health. It's also really important to understand that there's a lot of things that that people have gotten wrong with environmental toxins. One being the dose makes the poison. No, that's actually not correct. The other thing is they may study one chemical and be like, oh, it's safe in this amount. But they're not accounting for the fact that that one chemical lives in 12 of your products that is
that
being applied to your body mm-hmm. every day for decades. Because we tend to be brand and product loyal. Like, once we find something that works, we stick with it. I was just mm-hmm. talking about my hair product that I found like 20 years ago or something. And I'm like, I've used it for 20 years because it's like, I found the thing that works.
Yeah.
I'm just going to roll with it. So, you know, in all of that, I do go through this on the pill. There are resources at drbrayton.com. This is an area that I don't consider myself an environmental toxins expert. Like, I can't walk you through every single chemical and tell you everything they're doing and every study that's out there. But I very much advocate for a healthier planet and healthier humans. If the planet's healthy, it's a lot easier for all of us to be healthy. Mm-hmm. And when we're a lot healthier, we have a lot more energy to put into making a better environment for everyone.
Yeah.
And, you know, for anyone who, you know, follows my work, they know I say all the time, the way forward is together. And that means that as much as, like, I just want to feel better, I want to be amazing in my body, I also need to think about the impact of my actions and what I dollar vote with and how that impacts globally. I mean, not just the people in my, you know, my close community, but globally, how is that impacting the world that I want my son to live in when he's my age?
Absolutely. Well, Dr. Brayton, this has been such an amazing hour and 15 minutes that we've got to spend together. Once again, you have taught me so much, and I know that this will be such a value add to our listeners. So thank you so much. And if they want to follow you and learn more, I mean, you've mentioned, you know, your Instagram, your website, give it all to us right now so we can go follow you.
Yeah, so you can find the main hub, you can find me is at drbrayton.com, drbrighten. Literally, if you have a question about hormones and women's health, you will likely find the answer there. And if you don't, you just message us and we will make that article, that video, or whatever you need mm-hmm. to have the education and access to this information. And then, of course, my favorite place to play is Instagram mm-hmm. at Dr. Jolene Brayton. And then I know we don't all learn the same. Well, so there are videos on YouTube as well. So if you, you know, if you're like, wow, Dr. Brayton has a 5,000 word guide on PMDD or fibroids, because that, I mean, I give you it all, but you're like, that's a little much for me, hop over to YouTube and you'll awesome. Likely find a video educational tutorial on that as well.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for the time that you put into those resources just to educate us so we can make the right decisions for our health. Certainly appreciated. And guys, we'll make sure to link all of that stuff she just talked about so you can go directly to her Instagram, give her a follow, check out her website, so much information as she mentioned. But thanks again for joining us on the podcast. And guys, we'll talk to you later. Thank you so much for sipping on a cup of coffee and kettlebells with me today. To find a recap of today's show, be sure to check out the Burn Bootcamp blog. To get your daily dose, be sure to like our Facebook page at Coffee and Kettlebells and follow me on Instagram at morgan.a.klein. If you have any questions you'd like answered at the end of my next podcast or have any suggestions for guests that you'd like to see featured on the show, please reach out to me at coffeeandkettlebells@burnbootcamp.com. If you love this episode of the podcast, I'd love to hear from you. Please subscribe, rate, and leave a review on the iTunes store and be sure to share with your friends. Thanks again, and I hope you join me next time for a refill of coffee and kettlebells.